Today at Reader's Corner, Cy Montgomery, author of What the Chicken Knows, A New Appreciation of the World's Most Familiar Bird. I'm Bob Custer. Welcome to Reader's Corner. For more than two decades, our guest today kept a flock of chickens in her backyard. In her latest book, What the Chicken Knows, A New Appreciation of the World's Most Familiar Bird, National Book Award finalist Cy Montgomery takes us inside the flock and reveals all the things that make chickens such remarkable creatures. Cy Montgomery is a naturalist and author of more than 30 acclaimed books of nonfiction for adults and children, including Of Time and Turtles, which was a New York Times bestseller. I had the pleasure of interviewing Cy for another of her books, The Soul of an Octopus, a National Book Award finalist and a New York Times bestseller, which I highly recommend. She is the recipient of Lifetime Achievement Awards from the Humane Society and the New England Booksellers Association. She joins us today from her home in New Hampshire. Cy Montgomery, welcome back to Reader's Corner.
I'm so thrilled to be back with you. Thank you.
All right, great. Well, I tell you what, Cy, I've got to start with, I don't know whether it's a confession or what it is, but I read The Soul of an Octopus. I interviewed you about The Soul of an Octopus, and neither my wife nor I have ever eaten an octopus since then.
Oh, I'm thrilled to hear that.
So then just to add more fire to the flame, I read a book and interviewed Shelby Van Pelt.
Oh, great.
Yes, about remarkably bright creatures and Marcellus, my favorite octopus of all times. So you can imagine how I couldn't stand to order octopus from the menu. But when I talked this over with my wife and told her I was having you back and told her the name of the book, since we're not vegetarians, she said, whoa, now wait a minute here.
I'm ruining it for you.
Yeah, I can handle, she said, I can handle not eating octopus at the restaurant. But when it comes to chicken, that's in many, many, many of her favorite recipes. So we'll just get along with the interview, knowing that. But in any event, it's great to have you back. I have so many misconceptions about chickens that I never knew because I've never raised them. I've never really been around them. I grew up in the city and I've lived in cities my entire life. I've lived out in the middle of nowhere a few times, but nobody had chickens around. So maybe we could start with one of my misconceptions. Whenever I run across a chicken, the very last thing I would ever do is pick it up. At least yes. So I thought. Straighten me out on that one, Cy.
Well, if chickens are used to being picked up, they like it. Most of them do, a lot. But, you know, just like when you meet a new person, not everyone wants to be hugged right away.
Sure.
It's probably smart of you not to rush in and pick up a chicken, except in one instance. And that, counterintuitively, is if you are being attacked by a rooster. I learned this to my astonishment after more than two decades of living among chickens. And lo and behold, across the street from me, down the road a little and across the street, who moves in but this wonderful couple who ran a rooster rescue. And tons of people dump their rooster when the rooster, this doesn't happen with all roosters, but often roosters who are such good protectors of their flocks will actually even attack their owners in their zeal to defend their hens. And no one likes having their pet attack them. But what do you do about this? Well, my friend Ashley Nagley told me that what you should do is don't fight back, don't just stand your ground, but pick up the rooster and cuddle him. And it sounds incredibly crazy, but I've met the roosters who she has tamed, roosters who bloodied people. And these roosters are just the kindest, most lovely gentlemen. You would not believe it. Her two children carry them around all the time. One of the roosters enjoys watching her husband work on the car. Another rooster has learned how to open the door by turning the doorknob and runs upstairs every morning to the top of the stairs and then crows. And another rooster thoughtfully brings her sweet gifts and drops shiny things and little things that he thinks she might enjoy, such as gaskets, at her feet. So this is what you can do by forming a relationship with an animal who at first just seems like this nasty guy who's going to attack you.
Right. And I guess this is Cooter, who was one of Ashley's roosters. It made it into your book, isn't that right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Cooter is no longer with us, alas.
Oh.
But Cooter's son, I think, is still here. And there's still quite a few roosters over there. The rooster rescue, she's not taking in new roosters, just so that listeners don't start mailing their roosters to Hancock, New Hampshire.
Right.
But she still has a number of roosters who have been rescued, as well as some hens. And the roosters don't fight each other either, because she keeps them so that they can't see each other when there are hens present. If you have your own flock, you're going to be perfectly happy. And sometimes flocks will have a couple of roosters and they won't fight. And sometimes if you have just roosters, if it's an all, it's a bro situation,
Yeah,
if
right.
it's all guys, they generally won't fight. But they will sometimes fight if there's lots of ladies to fight over. And
Sure.
she and her husband have figured out a way for everyone to live in peace.
Well, how has life been for barnyard roosters, or I should say barnyard chickens in general, since the pandemic? You have something in your book that alludes to a little bit of a downfall.
Well, first of all, not everyone, but many people got backyard chickens during the pandemic. They had time to tend to more animals, and many of them just fell in love with them. But other folks, when they had to go back to work, just didn't have time to tend to their flock, and they're bringing them into rescues and to SPCAs, and a lot of these places are just flooded with unwanted chickens, which is extremely sad. Chickens are far more smart and social and affectionate than many people realize. And just being, some of them are just dumped in the forest for people that don't bring them, into a rescue. And that's a hard place for a chicken to live. Chickens, of course, evolved from wild living ancestors who actually look exactly like the rooster on the Kellogg's cornflakes, the jungle fowl, which lives in Asia, and I've met them in the wild. They're adapted to the wild, but a chicken cannot live that long in the wild, because there's so many predators, at least when you consider that people's dogs are their predators, and foxes are their predators, and raccoons are their
Yeah.
predators, and hawks are their predators, and weasels are their predators, and my husband says, if you want to see wildlife in New Hampshire, just get a flock of free-range chickens.
Right. Well, I have a friend who had a chicken named Millie. Millie was great. And as you discuss in your book, every night at a certain hour, around 7 o'clock, she'd peck on the back door window. And that means I want to come in now and go in. And she had a little special place to sleep every night. And
Oh.
it just goes to show you that these chickens, as you help our readers understand, know a heck of a lot more than we thought they did. But before we get to some of the things I want to talk about, the traits of chickens, how many chickens are in the chicken universe right now?
There's definitely more chickens than humans on this planet.
Yeah,
I
like
think
four to
something
one,
like
maybe.
4 to 1.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and this is because a lot of people eat eggs and a lot of people eat chickens.
Yeah, like I think you said, on an annual basis, those of us who aren't vegetarians anyway, eat 100 pounds of chicken.
Yeah,
Wow.
that's kind of amazing, isn't it?
It sure is.
I've been a vegetarian for decades and decades and decades. But I do eat eggs, and my chickens have always been happy to have me take their eggs. They never peck, they've never been upset. You just gently reach in and get them. And some chickens have been known to purposely give their egg as a present to their person. There was one little boy, he had a chicken who he loved, and every day this chicken would basically knock on the door and be asked to be let in, and laid the egg every day on the boy's pillow.
Wow. You're listening to Sy Montgomery. She's the author of What the Chicken Knows, A New Appreciation of the World's Most Familiar Bird. You know, there's an old saying that my mother used to use, Cyan. I'm sure you've heard it. In fact, it's in your book. She's running around like a chicken with her head cut off.
Yes.
Tell us about that from the chicken's perspective, and especially Mike the chicken.
Yes, Mike the headless chicken. This is one of the things that oddly makes people think chickens aren't that smart, because they can continue to run around for a little while after you've cut off their head. Why this doesn't make people admire them even more, I don't know, because that's quite a feat. But Mike the headless chicken was being slaughtered for his owner's mother-in-law, who particularly liked chicken neck. So the way he cut the head off, he was trying to preserve as much of the neck as possible. And as it turns out, he didn't cut the entire head off. He left some of the brain still there. And Mike, the headless chicken, continued to live for months and months and months and became a star on like the sideshow circuit. Again, you know, the thought that you can walk around and do stuff without your head, I think, is a really admirable feat. And this is why Mike the Headless Chicken is celebrated every year in the California town where he lived for far longer than anyone expected. It's his admirable will to live that they say that they are celebrating. But unfortunately, it's also this admirable will to live that gives people the idea that there's not much going on in the chicken brain. But nothing could be further from the truth.
And just in case anyone's wondering, well, how could Mike have stayed alive if he didn't have a head and was not able to peck for food? As I remember it, I think he got fed intravenously or something.
Well, he got fed. His gullet was still.
His gullet was there.
So, you know, if there's a gruesome thing to consider, but there's lots of people who can't swallow food, but you can put a tube down their throat. And essentially, that's what they did for Mike.
Talk about a guy who wound up on the lucky side of life, at least for a while.
Well, sort of.
Sort of, right. So how many varieties of chicken are there? You have some absolutely gorgeous photos of some of the varieties in your book, One of the Reasons to Buy It. I mean, it's really well done.
Yeah, those photos by Tia Strombeck, who's a dear friend of mine and kind of a bird whisperer. She's amazing. We've worked together on a number of books, including one on California condors, for which I had the great privilege of being both bitten and pooped upon by this enormous vulture. But there are chickens with like fancy feathery feet who look like they're walking around on their father's oversized slippers. There
right.
are chickens with poofy topknots. There are chickens with tails that are so long that even if they're perched way high up, their tail feathers come cascading down to the ground. And there's itty-bitty chickens, and there's gigantic chickens, and there are some chickens who have both black skin and black bones. It turns out that chickens, sort of like pigeons are, and sort of like dogs, are among the creatures that you can just get tons of different looking breeds by selectively breeding them.
Yeah.
And there's, I think, hundreds of breeds recognized, but they often crossbreed, producing yet more exciting and beautiful mm-hmm. colors and shapes. There's some with frizzled feathers. There's some that look like every feather has been like dipped in gold. I mean, they can be gorgeous. There's even ones called turkeys. And when you see them, you think, oh my gosh, did they cross a chicken with a turkey? Because they have a naked neck.
Mm-hmm.
And but they are not a cross between a chicken and a turkey. They are pure chicken. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why you would want a naked neck, but that's they look kind of odd to me. But for me, the most important thing that I looked for in a chicken was I would like some eggs. You know, I really wanted their company, though. And I wanted them to be comfortable in the cold New Hampshire winters. So if folks are thinking of selecting a chicken, it's very easy to be seduced by the most beautiful chicken that you set your eyes on. But make sure it's somebody who can tolerate what temperatures that you have where you live. And will, you know, do what it needs to do to survive. There's some chickens who don't lay a whole lot of eggs. There's some chickens who lay Easter eggs, who are colored eggs. Some are light blue or light green or kind of pinkish. And that's really sweet and cool. But most important to me is that the chicken be comfortable where you have them. You don't want them to be too hot or too cold.
So I hate to ask this delicate question, but it just occurred to me. If I'm going to a supermarket to buy a chicken, is there one particular breed that we always get? Or like in eggs, do the eggs come from only certain breeds or?
Well, there are some who lay brown eggs all the time, some who lay white eggs all the time. So if you're looking for white eggs, they're coming from a breed that lays those.
I see.
What is unfortunate is at factory farms, people have been breeding chickens to, for example, if you're eating the chickens, they'll be so fat, they'll have such like big breasts that they basically can't walk. And in these factory farms, which are essentially concentration camps for living, thinking, feeling creatures, it's also filthy. So they are fed huge amounts of antibiotics. So if I ate chickens or fed chickens to my family, I would avoid giving my family diseased, suffering animals.
In other words, free-range chickens is what you
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, pasture range, this is very interesting to me. I did not realize this. I thought that, you know, free-range meant that they were running around in the sunshine on the grass. It doesn't necessarily mean that.
Uh-huh.
Pasture-raised means they are running around outside on the grass. Free-range only means, to qualify for free-range, that you open a little door through which the chicken could, if it wanted, go outside for some amount of time. But a lot of times, you know, if you've never really been outside before, you're afraid to go through that door. Yeah. Or maybe it's too cold outside. Or maybe the farmer doesn't really want them to be outside, so they've made it unattractive. So if you want eggs from a chicken who's living a good life, get pasture raised. Organic, by the way, means nothing at all. Humane wise, it just means that they're being fed organic food and they're not being swamped with antibiotics, but it doesn't have anything to do with how the animal is living. So go for pasture raised.
Well, let's get back to the kinds of chickens that were in your barnyard. And we'll talk about recognition. Help us understand how a chicken looks at the rest of the world, especially her flock or her owner. I think you had a friend, Elizabeth, that apparently she named all of her chickens and they knew their names?
Yes, I'm sure they did. Because to a chicken, the most important thing in their world is relationships. And this is something that we revere in our own culture. You know, what is more important than family and community? That's something we treasure. And the same is true of chickens. Even the pecking order. We think of the pecking order as being some nasty thing and it's all about pecking. But no, it's about order, of knowing your place in your community. And not everyone wants to be the president. You know, not everybody wants to be the top dog or the top chicken. Some chickens are perfectly happy to be a follower. And just getting this sorted is super important to chickens. And for this reason, chickens recognize at least 100 different faces. And that's chicken faces as well as human faces. They know our faces. And we know that they are recognizing each other by their face and not some other visual cue or an olfactory cue, because scientists with really interesting jobs have dressed up chickens in different ways. And they see that you can dye their feathers purple, you can make them wear a silly sweater, you can give them roller skates, and they'll still recognize each other as long as you don't mess with their face. But if you give them a fake comb or a beard, just like you'd recognize your friend if they're wearing a puffy sweater or if they're wearing a bathing suit, as long as you can see their face. But, you know, put a mask on your friend and you won't know who they are, maybe. That's the same with chickens.
Yeah, it reminds me of a section in your book where you talk about game birds, including chickens at birth, and how nature takes over immediately when they see who they think is, you can finish the sentence or tell
their
us
mother.
The story. Yeah.
Right. Because in the wild, all game birds have what is called the precocial strategy of growing up. You've heard of precocious children. Now, a lot of baby birds we think of as these naked peeping things, just opening their little beaks and waiting for their mom and dad to stuff them with worms. So that's the altricial strategy. But the precocial strategy is you break out of your egg and you are ready to go. You can peck, you can walk, you can see, you can think. And in nature, the first thing you see, the first large object you see moving is almost certainly your mother. So you follow them. Well, with my chickens, when I raised them from babies, the first big thing they saw moving was me. I raised them in my office. And I would sit writing with a chicken perched on my shoulder or my head or in my lap or sometimes running across my keyboard, which explains some of the sentences, I suppose, in earlier books. And they loved me, and I was an honorary member of the chicken universe. So that was great. And when my husband or I would drive up in our car and get out of the car, instantly a flock of chickens would come running to greet us. We felt like, you know, the Beatles had just landed at the airport. You feel so appreciated and adored. But they also learned to love and enjoy other neighbors. And they loved the little girls who moved in to the house next door. My flock, chickens are very good at discerning spatial situations. They know where their land is. And my chickens never used to hop over the low stone wall that they could easily have surmounted between our house and the next door neighbors for the longest time. And maybe it was because he had this nice Airedale. Maybe they're afraid of the Airedale, but the Airedale was like hardly ever alone in the backyard. Then he moved away and the house was vacant. They still never went over that wall next door until these little girls and their mom moved in. And the little girls were enchanted by our 750-pound pig, Christopher Hogwood, and they were always over our house, and then we were always over their house. And then it was the chickens who realized before even my husband and I knew it that our two units had become one. There was a shift in the social world, and it was then that they annexed our neighbor's property because they realized we were all one family.
Wow.
And when the little girls moved away, though, which broke our hearts, we were so nervous about who's going to move in next door and, you know, are they going to be okay with the fact that we have a great big pig and a flock of chickens and what are the chickens are going to do? But we shouldn't have worried because Bobby and Jarvis Coffin were moving in and they had had pigs and chickens and our chickens loved them so much that they would actually mount the stairs, two flights of stairs, to go up to the little porch that looked in on Bobby's kitchen where she would be washing dishes or making food. And they'd look in there and try and get her to come out, which she then did. They used to buy grain for our chickens, corn actually, for our chickens. And they would mob them just like they would mob us because Bobby and Jarvis also became part of our family.
So how often does a chicken live?
Well, it depends. The world's oldest chicken has lived into, I think, teenage or beyond. But normally, they don't live long enough. It breaks your heart. I mean, my chickens would live to like 8 or 9 or 10. But sometimes, with birds, birds conceal their any illness. And among veterinarians, it's often said that the first symptom of disease is death. And we had two wonderful roosters at one point, Lakenvelders, gorgeous, gorgeous roosters. And these two roosters were very kind, never attacked. And they just keeled over. We called it sudden rooster death syndrome. And interestingly, roosters and hens have very different physiology. They even have a different heart rate. And roosters are far more delicate. Interestingly, male humans are more delicate than female humans, which is why you go into an old age home, and if you're a guy, you're going to be swamped with ladies, right?
Exactly. You were on watch, taking care of a neighbor's flock. and a bear visited.
And oh, this was awful.
Yeah, and that brings up the subject you raised in your book about, yeah, there's a comeback in nature, but not a real good deal for chickens.
Yeah, I no longer have chickens in our barn. And it's because here in New Hampshire, we have had a great healing from, you know, the outright murder of all the predators that made our ecosystem whole. Our ecosystem is recovering. And while it is possible to safely keep chickens and even have them free range much of the time, it was not possible with the setup that we had, given the position of our house and the position of our barn. My neighbor, Julie Brown, and her husband, Phil, had a flock of chickens, and I got down to one chicken, okay? Everybody got old, got killed, except one last chicken, and she moved in with their flock. And I used to take care of her flock anyway when they would go away on vacation. And she had a great setup. I thought it was predator-proof, pretty much. And she and her children were often outside with the chickens, and her front door opened out on the barnyard. So that's not the case with the way our barn is. In fact, our neighbors see more of our barnyard than we do just because of the position of the house. It's an old place. Well, so one day, while I was taking care of their chickens, I go down there, and I was sure I'd carefully locked everybody up at night, but all the chickens were running around outside that morning, and I thought, oh no, what happened? And the entire back of the coop had been torn off by the claws of a bear. And I thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I don't have the carpentry skills to rebuild this, and even if I did, I can't outwit this bear. I'm not as strong as a bear. What am I going to do? Well, what I did was I figured I'll take her chickens back to my barn, keep them inside. The bear doesn't know about my barn. And it would have been very hard for a bear to get in our barn. It wasn't hard for a weasel to get into our barn. We'd had skunks come in. We'd had raccoons sometimes, but a bear would have had trouble getting in. So my next worry was, oh my gosh, what about these traumatized survivors? Because two of the chickens had been killed and eaten by the bear. How am I going to make them feel at home in my barn? Well, one of my chickens was living with her flock and had been there for years, but I knew she'd remember where she lived. So the first chicken I moved there was her and her best friend. Every chicken has a best friend or two next to whom they roost at night. So, and I knew who her best friend was. So I caught them up, put them in a pet carrier, let them go, and darned if my girl did not hop up exactly on the place she used to roost years before. And her friend, seeing that this chicken felt perfectly at home, she felt like, well, it must be fine. And then when I got all the rest of the chickens, they took their cues from my chicken and her best friend. And so everybody settled in just fine. And when Julie and Phil got back and rebuilt their chicken coop, this time he put an electric fence around the whole coop. Yeah,
that'll do it. Well, yeah. That does it for our show as well. I've run out of time, Si, but I'll tell you, there's one takeaway I get here, and that is to remind our listeners, pasture raised is the way to go if you're going to buy a chicken for the purpose of eating it. But otherwise, this book, What the Chicken Knows, A New Appreciation of the World's Most Familiar Bird, is a great way to begin your decision over whether or not to bring a chicken into your life. A live chicken, that is. Si, thanks so much for joining us today at Reader's Corner. It's been a real pleasure to have you back again, and we will await your next book for sure.
Wonderful. What an honor for me to join you.
Reader's Corner is presented by Boise State Public Radio News. The sound engineer for today's show is James Baker, with production by Joel Wayne. I'm Bob Kustra. Please join me next week as we talk to today's leading writers about the ideas and issues that help shape our world at Reader's Corner.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.